So what's up?
Oh, here again.
Yes, we are. How was your weekend?
Not terrible, I guess. Wasn't... Well, I can't remember it. Well, actually, my sister had her birthday party. That's why.
Okay.
We went over there, and it was... When they rescheduled... They scheduled originally, like, 20 people could come. Everybody had babysitters, and it was cool. But she ended up getting sick and having to cancel. So then she rescheduled, and she threw out a date, and nobody was available, but they went ahead and did it anyway. So it was kind of a shorter turn, smaller turnout, and everybody just drank and had a good time.
Right.
So it was not a complete blowout by any means, but it was a good time. We sat around the pool, kid-free. Good old time. How about yourself?
It was weird. It had lots of ups and downs. Saturday started off with having to buy a new tire on my way to a comic book show and ended with being broken down in the hood with a broken McPherson strut. But in between, it was really cool. One of the coolest things is my friend Jason's birthday. Jason Palooza was this weekend, his annual birthday party. Happy birthday, Jason. And he has it every year at his in-law's place on North Galveston Bay on a private beach.
Nice.
Where we do lightsaber battles once the sun sets, and it looks really, really cool out there. And it's hanging out with a whole bunch of NASA scientists and former NASA scientists. So we spent the night finding, they could actually spot satellites as they were passing overhead.
Oh, that's cool.
And they taught me how to pick them out of the sky and everything and spot them and stuff, which was pretty neat, man. We saw three of them, if I'm not mistaken, that night. That was really cool. My son was amazed by that.
Every now and then you'll see one moving. It just kind of like, it's way high up there and you think it's a plane, but then it's way too high to be a plane.
Well, and also, because the light from a satellite comes from the sun itself, it doesn't flicker. It's just going to stay constant. An airplane is going to flash.
Right.
That's another way to tell. And also, because it's so high up, as it goes over, because of the spinning of the Earth, it's going to change its course to where it's not going to be in a straight line. It's going to kind of curve up this way.
Oh, that's cool.
It was pretty cool, man. It was neat. And then we made dry ice bombs and threw them out on the beach and blew them up.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
Back in the day when I was a walking felony, Chris and I, he used to come pick me up. He'd be like, look at all the bottles I got. We'd go to a store and buy some dry ice. We'd have a water bottle. And what we'd do is we'd go down to Buffalo Bayou. We'd throw them in the bayou. And then like we just kind of hung out by a bridge. You know, it's kind of like kids do, just throwing rocks, whatever. But we'd throw in the water, and it was like Rummel Creek that was running through the neighborhoods, like the rich neighborhoods over Memorial. And you'd hear it get about half a mile away, and just like, boom! And you know, like everybody went out in their yard, they thought something was going on.
Right.
But we were so far away that it could never be traced back to us.
Yeah, it could be connected.
You know? So we'd wait a few minutes, and then drop another one.
See, we used to do them in swimming pools. We'd throw them in swimming pools in the subdivision we used to pass through every once in a while. And I think it cracked. We heard that it cracked somebody's gunite one time.
Oh, that's
so
not good.
Yeah, we kind of shut it down after that.
Nah, that's not cool.
I'm past the statute of limitations on that one, though, so they can't do anything. So I can talk about it now.
Well, all right, here we are, episode 44 of the Scary Dad Podcast. We're going to talk about some axe murderers.
Axe, not ask, but axe.
The axe murderers, like chopping people with an axe.
Now, growing up, I'm sure you remember that old Lizzie Borden poem. Lizzie Borden got an axe, gave her father 40 whacks when she sold. You know, axe murder was like a real big deal back in the day.
Axe murder, well, dude, I remember back in the 90s, there was that Mexican dude that was like hopping the trains, and he was like showing up in small towns and whacking some folks.
Yeah, he came through Houston.
Yeah, he came
times.
Through Houston. He was like all up and down South Texas and stuff. And, you know, I guess you hang around and you're just like, well, I'm homeless. I ain't got nothing better to do.
I just found this axe.
might as well have me some fun. But we got two of them that are strikingly similar in sort of the same time. It's like that.
Very close to the same
period. That late 1800s. Now, we'll get into this in a little bit, but it seems almost fair. We understand the concept of PTSD now. But there was a lot of Civil War vets that, on both sides, obviously.
That saw some shit.
And the government didn't do a tremendous amount. Like, the government VA back then wasn't really good then either.
Right.
They say it's bad now. It's at least as bad, if not worse, then.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of people with a lot of traumatic... There's a lot of people with a lot of demons running around back then. And, so, yeah, we're going to talk about a couple of axe murders. But first, let's get into some old business.
Yeah, let's knock that
out. Let's get into... the ones we're talking about happened in the late 1800s. This one happened in 1040. King Duncan the First is killed in battle with his cousin Macbeth, who then becomes King of Scotland. Mm-hmm. Not an axe murder, but probably a sword murder.
Yeah, somebody got cut.
Yeah. Again, not axe, but possibly some axes. 1480, the Battle of Otranto. Ottoman troops behead 800 Christians for refusing to convert to Islam.
Religious wars, man. They've been the bloodiest in history, I swear.
Mm-hmm. No good. Here's some positive stuff. 1888, audio recording of Arthur Sullivan's The Lost Chord is one of the first recordings of music that was ever made. So, 1888, first audio recordings, 1988, you know, we could go out and buy the Guns N' Roses Lies album. You know, the technology moved very quickly.
Yes. This one field of media that technology has definitely improved.
For sure.
Tremendously.
1936, Rainey Berthea is hanged. He's the last public execution in the United States.
Bring him back.
You think UFC's popular?
Now, that's probably the last public execution as far as government type, right? Because, I mean, they've had people killed with southern lynchings and stuff like that afterwards.
Well, yeah, but that's not... That's probably a true government
that's a execution.
Vigilante. Yeah. This is the last public, like, government sanctioned
execution. Yeah, sanctioned execution. That's the word I was looking for.
1975, the Rocky Horror Picture Show opens in London.
And what? It was exactly about 20 years later, I learned how... No, less than 20 years later, I learned how to set non-dairy creamer on fire. Thanks to going to see that movie one night. I did not know you could set non-dairy creamer on fire as easily as you can. And I was a pyro after that.
Probably the only good thing out of that movie. God, I remember... I've told you how, like, me and my friends... You know, went on a horror movie marathon rampage back
then. You threw that one in?
Well, somebody did. You know, we didn't know what it was. It was, you know,
obviously Rocky Horror Picture Show.
It was like on a stack of VHSs, and somebody threw it in, and we watched it. And, you know, that first, like, few minutes, it's very, very reminiscent of Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
You know, and like, okay, what are we getting into here? And then all of a sudden... The transsexual from Transylvania does his little dance, and you're like, all right, well, what else is on? I don't think I've ever sat all the way through that movie. Anyway, it's part of pop culture history, though.
Yeah, no doubt. It definitely found its niche, and it has a huge cult following.
For sure. Okay, happy birthday, this date in 1851. I'm your Huckleberry.
Yes, indeed.
Mr. Doc Holliday.
I'm trying to decide if I like this guy. Yeah, I hate him. I've decided I hate him. That's one of my favorite movie scenes of all time, dude. He starts spinning the cup.
Why do you follow Wyatt Earp? He's my friend. So I have lots of friends. He's like, I don't.
Val Kilmer was the shit at one time,
was.
Dude.
He absolutely was. He got too involved in his own self and kind of went off the rails.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to come back. Kind of doing that 80s revamp thing like Michael Keaton did. But cool guy. I mean,
you mentioned Michael Keaton. I was actually thinking today, I don't know why I got on this tangent, just sitting there thinking, there are certain actors that have been with me so long in my life that they, like, hold a huge part of my life, man. They mean so much to me. Like, Michael Keaton's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And another one I was thinking about was Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was watching Moonlighting with Bruce Willis as a kid with my mom.
Yeah, before he got famous.
I'm still watching movies with him. You know, it's a long time.
Oh, yeah. I remember because my folks would watch Moonlighting before, you know, and then whenever Die Hard came out, I remember my dad saying something along the lines of, like, he's just not that kind of actor. Like, he's a romantic comedy guy. He's not an action adventure guy. And then we saw it. It was like, whoa. He can do it all.
But him, Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom, was the first movie I remember seeing with him, and he's been in my life since then, you know, to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom Hanks is another
one. Yeah, you know, no doubt. Bosom Buddies. I remember watching that when I was a kid.
Tom Hanks never really went away, but I remember those couple of moments where it was just like, he's on his way. He's on his way quickly, you know. Yeah. The Money Pit.
Yeah,
where he's just like, that's sort of. I mean, it's funny. It's a funny movie, but it's kind of a throwaway role until you look at just how much absolute, out the pressure he was under to hold it all together, and shit's just falling down around him, and he's just got that like crazy look in his eye and that twitch and that kind of like crazy laugh, and you're just like, this guy is brilliant.
He is. He was a great actor, man. He still is, of course. But yeah, he was phenomenal in the roles that he had.
He's apparently really cool too.
Seems to be. Like, well, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen he did this bit last year or the year before where he was on Saturday Night Live and he was on Black Jeopardy as an old redneck guy. Yeah, it's so funny.
Good answer there, Doug.
The answer is skinny women. They can't do nothing for me. Good answer, Doug.
Doug is cool. Speaking of 80s celebrities, happy birthday 1945 to Mr. Steve Martin.
Yes, another absolute genius that has been in my life for a very long time.
So cool, so brilliant.
God, yes.
Just multi-talented. It's like, he's a wild and crazy guy, but he's won like 4 Grammys for banjo.
Yeah. You know, like, he's a very talented man, dude. He's one of the greatest comedic minds of our age.
He's one of my favorites.
The Jerk is just a phenomenal movie that never gets stale. You know, he was awesome in it. He's awesome in everything he does.
Absolutely. Okay, I don't know how much you used to read this guy, but 1950, Gary Larson, he wrote The Far Side.
Okay. Oh, I used to read the shit out of The Far Side.
I used to read, dude. I have all of the treasuries. The Far Side is just weird thinking, but man, I love it.
But you could connect with it so many times.
Oh, absolutely. It and Calvin and Hobbes were two, like, that was me growing up. Like, I always read Garfield, and I was just like, this is me as a kid. You know, you're supposed to like Garfield. You're supposed to kind of find it funny. So I was like, man, if I had a fucking animal that lived like that, I would just boot it. Like, I would put it in a box and put it out in the street. Like, this sucks. But Calvin and Hobbes and The Far Side.
Kevin Hobbes was real cool.
Just absolutely
brilliant.
That was
great stuff. But yeah, Far Side. I remember in high school, 3 years I had, because I was in Gifted back when it was like only 10 kids in school and we were kind of, you know, set to the side and everybody talked about us. And I had the Far Side cartoon where it's the school for the gifted and the kid is pushing on the pull door. That sat in my locker for 3 years, man.
That stuck in my head. Every time I push on a door and it doesn't go, I'm always like, school for the gifted. And I give it a yank. Especially if it's got a big sign on it that says push. <It's> like... Okay, notable deaths. There's a big thing called fake news that's floating around in our vernacular in our United States these days. But these people, or the people, not the news media, not the politicians, but the everyday Joe Sixpack man on the street is operating on some auspice that news was ever anything but fake. Well, William Randolph Hearst, who died on this date in 1951, he changed the way newspapers were made. Prior to him, it was very much news. And if you read old newspapers from back in the day, they're somewhat
straightforward.
Boring.
Yeah.
This happened. There was no real spin. You know, Ellie Mae Clampett died because she fell into a well and cracked her skull. You know, survived by her father and her brother, whatever. William Randolph Hearst was, he was not a newsman. He wanted to sell newspapers.
Sensationalism.
So it was very sensationalized. If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
But dog bites man is not a headline. Man bites dog is a headline. Like, all of that stuff. And he would publish stuff without any kind of references, you know, whatever. And everybody else followed suit because everybody was buying the tabloids. Yeah. And there were some libel laws and some different stuff that were put into place because people's character was getting completely shot. But for the most part, since late 1800s, early 1900s, William Randolph Hearst, and we talked about in our cult episode, his granddaughter, Patty Hearst, that she was the heir to the newspaper empire, to the Hearst Empire, got pulled into that hippie cult in L.A. Yeah. More tragic news this day in 1988, Enzo Ferrari bit the dust. Made himself a household name.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. when you think of Italian supercars, what do you think of?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's funny that the guy who created Lamborghini was being critical of the Ferrari, of like some features or something. And him, Lamborghini and Ferrari were friends. And Lamborghini was like, oh, no, you can't do that, and you can't do this, and you shouldn't do this. And Ferrari was like, well, if you're so smart, make your own car. And so we did. That's badass.
It was recently, I want to say about 3 days ago, I read an article in England. This guy purchased a new Ferrari, $280,000 car, and had it for an hour before he totaled it.
Wow.
And it went up in a blaze.
Was it just speeding?
It caught air. The cop said he wasn't speeding. No speeding or alcohol involved. Just all of a sudden, it caught air and went up, went off road, and blew up.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd be pretty disgusted.
Yeah, you think?
But then again, if you're buying a $280,000 car, you probably got plenty of money to go ahead.
You got insurance.
Well, yeah.
But dude, have you seen? If you go on YouTube, you can find some. Like, there's. I think it is a Ferrari, but it's like a vintage Ferrari. They're at a car show, and there's some lady, and she's not like just trying to find a place to park, and she backs into and just crunches the rear quarter panel on this and it's like it's a $500,000 car. It was like the dude is just he's so pissed because it was just sitting there, like he's not driving it. It's just sitting there, and everybody's like, no. She's like,
of course.
She gets out and she's all like, I don't know.
The most famous Ferrari disaster, of course, was from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes.
That was just a sickening scene.
It wasn't a retainer.
And, you know, I love it. I think I mentioned before in a movie, Kicking It Old School, it starts off where Jamie Kennedy's in a hospital in a coma. And he's been in a coma for 20 years, and the doctor walks in, and it's Fry. It's the guy. Yeah, it's Cameron. Cameron from the movie, and he's a doctor. And, people say, hey, Dr. Fry, how you doing? And he starts talking to him, and he starts talking about how much they owe, and he goes, you know, I'm still paying for that Ferrari. So, you done with old news?
Old news is signed. It's in the bag.
Well, let's talk about a little new news.
Did you say nude news?
That's for later. That's okay. For the other podcast.
All right.
The Pervy Dad podcast that we do.
Let's not start that one.
Fandom Fest show in Louisville, Kentucky, recently pissed off a lot of people by having their annual event this past weekend and canceling 24 of their guests at the last minute. Tickets have been sold. And when people came out and said, well, I bought VIP passes. Some people bought VIP passes for like 12 of these 24 people. They said, well, pick somebody else. No refunds. And the owners were adamant. They said, you know, people check a box saying they understand the policy, and that's just the way it is.
Wow.
Yeah. No refunds at all given. And, I mean, Weird Al Yankovic canceled, you know, just all kinds of folks. And it almost – this is so many cancellations. You know, half the guest list canceled. It's very reminiscent of a con that happened in Houston where what they would do is – if they'd start contract negotiations, then that person was attending, and they would announce them.
Right.
And the contract never gets finalized, so what they do is say, this person canceled. That's exactly what it sounds like.
So it makes a celebrity look bad rather than themselves for not. That's why, if you're listening to this, we're right now currently, well, hopefully we will be done by the time this airs, but we're working on pulling in some sponsors to give away some swag at our Scary Dad's Haunted Halloween show. We've had a couple people say, yeah, we might do that. But we're not actually going to announce them as a sponsor
until we're sure.
Until their stuff is in our hands.
Yes.
We're like, okay, well, so-and-so gave us passes to such and such a thing and emailed us their logo, so we'll go ahead and throw it up there and make the announcement.
Right.
They can't, there's no backsies.
Right.
If we cancel our show, I'm sending their swag back. There's no backsies on this. So, just so you know, we ain't doing that crap.
You know, a lot of people complain because Comic Palooza takes so long to announce their guests, and, you know, they kind of trickle it out because they don't announce anybody until a contract is signed and in hand.
Right.
You know, negotiations are one thing, but until you're sure that person is coming and the person's schedule is open, you don't announce stuff. And like I said, I think that's what this sounds, it sounds like a clear-cut case of what happened.
Yeah, that's too many cancellations all at once.
Yeah, 24 of their, I want to say they had 26 guests left.
Yeah.
So half the guests canceled.
Yeah.
Okay, another one, which you might enjoy this little bit of news. You ever wonder what happened to Jack Skellington after the movie?
Occasionally.
You're about to find out. Because A Nightmare Before Christmas comic book series will be coming out. And it's going to continue the story of Jack Skellington and all the folks from the movie, which ought to be pretty interesting. It's going to be put out as a manga, though. So you need to learn how to read backwards.
Oh, yeah?
Because mangas are published instead of, what is it?
Right to left.
Instead of right to left, left to right. Yep. But yeah, so that's something to look forward to. So hopefully it'll, you know, revitalize that little franchise. We might see another movie come out eventually.
Well, they had an Edward Scissorhands comic.
Yeah.
I got the first few issues of. It was not great. I had high hopes for it, but it was just kind of, it was weird. Like, if you watch Edward Scissorhands, you know at the beginning that Kim is old. You know, she's a grandmother, and she tells her daughter or granddaughter that, no, she never went back up. Mm-hmm. You know, she don't, I'm old. I'd want him to remember me the way. Well, this is like that granddaughter's either daughter or granddaughter herself. So it's like way down the line. And her parents don't want her to have anything to do with Edward because it's bad mojo or whatever. And Edward's just like there. It's just strange.
Yeah.
Like, didn't have a whole lot of. The art's kind of cool. The story's kind of like.
The story arc kind of took a.
The story's like turn. We didn't really know how we wanted to follow. To go with this, but
here you go.
Yeah, here's the story.
And last but not least, I know 2017 is not over with yet, but I got a list of horror movies that are coming out in 2018. It's a fairly exciting list, so I thought I'd go ahead and bring it up tonight. So,
cool.
Insidious Chapter 4 is going to be coming out, so there's going to be a fourth installment of the Insidious movie. The synopsis is Lynn Shaver reprised her role as Liz Rainier, while the other cast members are unknown at this stage. So that does not have a... Oh, the release date is actually January 5th, 2018, so that'll be coming out. A new Cloverfield movie will be coming out called God Particle, February 2nd, 2018. Rumored to be the untitled Cloverfield prequel. It takes place on board a spaceship where a shocking discovery forces a team of astronauts aboard a space station to fight for survival while their reality has been altered. So it sounds like it's going to be a pretty cool little movie there. May 18th of next year, we'll be getting the Slender Man movie. So that'll finally be coming out. A horror movie based on the Slender Man character, of course. The Purge number 4 will be coming out next year also in July. 4th of July, to be exact.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. The Nun, which is a movie starring Corin Hardy, will be coming out, which it's a Conjuring 2 spinoff. It's going to be based off of that. The Predator will be coming out August 3rd, 2018, my birthday there. Little is known about the plot of this stage, however, it's more likely to be a sequel rather than a reboot.
Did you know, this is a little trivia for you, did you know that the Predator, the Schwarzenegger movie, is technically Rocky V?
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's not technically, but what it was somebody made a crack, because after Rocky IV, after he fought Ivan Drago, So some of the producers or some, you know, somebody was at a rap party and they were like, well, you can't go any further than this. The story is done. Like, he's basically defeated the Soviet Union.
Right.
There's nowhere else for him to go. If you were to continue on, he'd have to be like fighting a space monster or something.
Right.
And the screenwriter took that, started just kind of as a joke, writing, you know, running a development, and they wanted Stallone in it as a not as a Rocky, but just kind of as a cash in on that popularity. Mm-hmm. And it ended up developing into Predator. They wanted they got Jean-Claude Van Damme to shoot a lot of the Predator scenes. He was the Predator at first.
Okay.
Him against Schwarzenegger.
Right.
But then Stan Winston came in and fixed all that. And, you know, then we got the Predator.
And we got a classic.
You know,
now.
It was called The Hunter. But yeah, it was supposed to be.
It's pretty cool.
It was basically Rocky V.
Very interesting. Then they came out with a Rocky V that was horrible, of course. Okay, another one that's coming out, Goosebumps Horrorland, which is going to be a sequel to the original Goosebumps movie. That's going to be in September. Return of Killer Clowns from Outer Space in 3D. They're rebooting that old series, which ought to be pretty neat. I'll actually enjoy the Killer Clowns from Outer Space movie. Halloween, the Danny McBride movie, will be coming out in October of next year. And The Strangers 2. Me and you talked about The Strangers before. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen that one yet.
I have not seen that.
Okay, so part two will be coming out. Film will follow a family whose road trip takes a turn when they arrive at a secluded mobile home park. Power goes out. They decide to hunker down for the night in a borrowed trailer. And three familiar masked psychopaths from the first one show up and decide to go ahead and test their limits. The Grudge will be coming out again. Another remake of Juan. Deep Blue Sea 2 will be coming out. These are right here. Don't have any release dates yet.
They're in development.
Firestarter. Stephen King is a reboot of Firestarter coming out next year. And a remake of The Blob. They're redoing The Blob. Will nice. Be coming out next year also, which is interesting. You know, the last remake of The Blob was filmed near my hometown of New Iberia, Louisiana, in a city called Abbeville, Louisiana.
Nice. Yeah, the one from the 80s?
Yeah, home of the Cattle Festival. I remember when they were filming it. Because they said they wanted it there because there was actually an old theater at the end of a street on Main Street in downtown Abbeville. And mm-hmm. it was set up perfect to where The Blob would come out from down the street. So.
Nice.
So that's it for the news.
All right. So if you were going to go on a rampage and kill a bunch of people, what would be your weapon of choice?
Probably a chainsaw.
Chainsaw?
Yeah.
Even though it's noisy and
it causes more fear. Make people fall down. You don't watch movies. They fall down. They can't run.
True. But if you're trying to be stealthy in a neighborhood and you're trying to get in and get out without being caught, chainsaw's a little bit loud.
Yeah.
You know, I'd go for a sword, which, by the way...
Machete would be cool.
Which, by the way, September 1st, open carry Texas.
It's true. You can start carrying a sword around.
So, everybody was so...
Get a big executioner's blade.
That's it. Everybody was so freaked out about open carry Texas, and, you know, for what it's worth, I'm a gun guy, right? So, I wasn't really an advocate for open carry per se because I wanted to do it. I just believe that, you know, it's a legal right that you have to defend yourself.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're gonna carry, you should be able to do so how you like. You know, I'm not into intimidation or anything, but that said, everybody flipped out about it, but in the year that it's been in place, I think I've seen like maybe two guys carrying openly, and one of them I'm pretty sure was a cop.
Right. It's not like the Wild West. It's not the Wild West or anything like that overnight.
So it's just one of those things of like, you're going to see right at the beginning, you're going to see a few people just doing it to do it, and then carrying a sword, it's hard to sit down. You can't sit at your desk for a long time with a sword on your belt. So we'll see how that goes. But you know what's never been illegal? Axes.
That's right.
So no matter what the law is, you can always grab one of those and go to town.
You do not have to be a lumberjack.
So we're going to talk about a couple of unsolved axe murders. Series of axe murders. And when we talked about it in our serial killers episode, these two didn't make it into that episode because, quite honestly, they didn't make any of the lists.
Right. Which is surprising.
Which is surprising, considering their body counts. So I stumbled upon a serial killer by the name of the Servant Girl Annihilator, who terrorized Austin between December of 1884 and Christmas Eve of 1885. he basically he killed seven. There was eight known victims.
Right. Seven women.
Seven women. Five of them are black. Two of them are white. And then there was one black man.
And you know, that's one of the reasons he got away with it for so long is that initially it was looked at, this is no joke, it was referred to as a Negro problem because he was just killing black women.
Well, they thought it was a domestic problem.
Yeah.
The further you go down into it, it wasn't like, oh no, they thought it was like, not gangland necessarily, but it was cloistered.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, when people talk about now, like the gun violence in Chicago, it's like, well, it's gangsters killing gangsters. If they weren't killing each other, you wouldn't have this issue. So there's only so much the cops can do,
yeah.
Right? That's the same. That's the way they looked on it, is they thought it was kind of like a domestic thing. Like,
yeah.
Eventually, it'll come to light that this guy just had a chip on his shoulder, what's going on. But the public at large, in general, was safe. He wasn't going after just random people.
Right.
It was specified people in this area. Little, in this little small area. But there was basically eight additional victims, six women and two men that were also seriously injured. So there was actually 16 total victims of the serving girl Annihilator in Austin. And it's just one of those things, right? Realizing there was no internet and no phones and stuff like that, you know, it was a different time, but still, how you can manage to go into all these people's houses and drag them out of their house. This was his MO. Because he would break into a house and he would go in while people were sleeping and drag them out of their house and hack them up with an axe.
Right.
And then on December 24th, 1885, that was the last attack in Austin, and then he stopped.
Yep. And this was a long time ago. It started, what, 1884?
First
murder.
Yeah, the December 30th. So basically, all of 1885. It was over the course of a year. He hit 16 people and killed eight of them.
Right. And it wasn't until Christmas Eve, 1885, where it kind of spread away from...
Right.
Black part of town, and people started getting scared.
Well, the last Christmas Eve, I think that was when he hit the most people, is that Christmas Eve, and I think he hit three or four of them in one night.
And they couldn't find this guy for anything. Detectives took bloodhounds to the scenes of all the first five murders. Nothing. Mm-hmm. No trails or anything. No scents were picked up. They were clueless. They had no idea what was going on.
They did catch a few people, like a couple of the women. They charged their boyfriends or they charged people down the street, but then they were released almost immediately because there was no evidence or there was an alibi.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those things, like we talked about it before, is like if you have a compulsion, I mean, that is a tremendous amount of expression in a very short period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Over the course of a year. I mean, that's more than one a month.
And it's having some balls, too.
Right.
To pull these crimes off.
And knowing that people are looking for you and just... To just be able to do it like that and then stop.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to the next thing, where you wonder, did they stop?
Yes, because how many years later was it?
It was almost 20 years later.
20 years later, in another southern...
1885, which is basically, essentially, 1886 to 1918, is 22 years later.
Right. In another southern town, all of a sudden, another mysterious set of crimes start occurring. The Axeman murders of New Orleans. And that had a city in terror.
Yes, the Axeman did almost exactly the same thing. Lasted exactly 1 year. There was six to seven dead and six to seven injured.
The only difference is this guy didn't care if you were a man or a woman.
Right.
He killed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The first being a married couple, Joseph Maggio and his wife. So there's one difference that he strayed. He started just killing people.
Right. Now, the police did look at this one because a lot of the murders, a lot of the victims were, like, Italian immigrants.
Yep.
So they were looking at maybe it was a, a reasoned killing. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody had a chip on their shoulder. Same thing within Austin where it was mostly black folks, so they thought, okay, well, it's some dude with a chip on his shoulder about black folks. And then he moved to, maybe not necessarily moved, but we're looking at a quite similar situation in New Orleans with the Axeman, where he was attacking Italians.
Yep.
And when, as they slept, breaking into the homes, same thing as the other guy.
Same MO, except for this time, instead of dragging them out, he killed them in their beds.
Yep.
But hey, that's 22 years later. Maybe you're a little bit, you're not as strong.
Right.
It's hard to drag somebody out of their bed and...
you realize if you do it quick enough, you can go ahead and take care of it there. You know, if there's only two people in the house...
The Axeman, the servant girl Annihilator, and the Axeman in New Orleans, neither one robbed anybody.
They killed to kill.
They killed to kill. They didn't take anything from the homes. They didn't take any money or valuables. They just went in there and killed them. And... kind of a funny thing, and I forgot to bring the printouts, but you have this December 30, 1884 to 1885, and then you have a 22-year-old gap. But then in Atlanta, and from a 1911 to 1912, there was the Mulatto Axe Murders. 20 young African-American and mixed-race women... Louisiana and Texas were dealing with murders of another kind. Once again, the victims were African-American and mixed race. And once again, the murders received little newspaper coverage, and few people remember these cases. Between January 1911 and April 1912, an unidentified killer or killers slaughtered 49 people in Louisiana and Texas, leaving the police baffled. In each case, the murder weapon was an axe, which was not uncommon at the time. In those days, an axe was often used, especially in cases of domestic murder. Nearly every family had one, since wood had to be split for cooking and heating, and it often became a weapon of convenience. But while there were murders all over the country, the string of murders was different. In addition to the axe being used as a murder weapon, all of the victims were mulattoes, or members of families with mixed-race children. The killer was presumed by blacks and the police alike to be selecting victims on the basis of their mixed blood. The first attack took place in Rainy, Louisiana, when her mother and her three children were hacked to death in their beds in February. About 10 miles in town of Crowley, about 10 miles from Rainy, three members were murdered in an identical manner to the earlier victims. 2 weeks later, four members of the Andres family in Lafayette were also murdered in their beds. Each one of them had been hacked to death with an axe during the early morning hours. Then he hit in Texas, in San Antonio. On November 29th, 1911, he went back to Lafayette. Six members of the Randall family were slain in their beds. So basically, you just have this string of axe murders all along between Louisiana, Texas, and Georgia.
Right.
And they're all cloistered in areas where a massive amount of murder happens all at once and then suddenly stops.
And nobody gets caught.
There's no clues.
There's no idea of who could have committed it.
And somebody's just moving up and down the rail lines, hopping off, taking people out.
With an axe.
That's it. Let's see here. Where was I? Arrests were made all over the region, and every man who had used an axe as a murder weapon was suspected of being a traveling killer who had slain so many families. Suspect after suspect was picked up in small towns and in railroad yards in Louisiana and Texas, but the authorities were unable to find anyone they could solidly connect to any of the crimes. The killer's four-month hiatus came to an end on August 6, 1912. Later that night, the wife of a mixed-race man woke to the blinding pain of an axe cutting through her arm. The assailant had been aiming for her head, but had somehow missed and struck her arm instead. She began to scream. The attacker fled from the house. She was unable to give any kind of description. And with that, the murder spree came to an end, leaving the police and detectives without a single solid piece of evidence. So that was 1911 to 1912. So there's
a possible bridge that gap.
Is that, I mean, yeah, so.
And the thing about it is, you know, these gaps, it could be he got arrested for loitering. He got arrested for some other petty crime and just had to serve some jail time. And had to take a break for a while. And when he finally got back to it.
Yeah. He got hot. You know, and it's one of those things, of, like, it just kind of depends on your what's going on in your life. You know, a lot of these people we talked about, a lot of these axe murderers or these serial killers, they had families.
Yeah.
They had jobs. They were socially active. They were members of the church. But what if whatever, you know, it's like you're the axe man or you're the servant girl annihilator, but then, you know, you walk into your work one day and your boss is like, you know, good news, Wilkes Cox, we're transferring you to Florida for a month.
Right.
You know, or 6 weeks or, you know, 2 years or whatever. You're going to Sheboygan, you know, and you're like, oh, well, I can't be murdering people up there because if I show up and so does a bunch of axe murdering, then, well,
they might put two and two together.
But as long as he's running those rail lines in the South and killing somewhat disenfranchised and disaffected groups, nobody's looking too hard. Or if they are, by the time they find the bodies, you're already 200 or 300 miles away on, you know, on a train.
Right.
So these small towns, no telephone, no electricity.
Yeah.
A lot of them, you know, you can sneak in and do your thing and be gone before anybody ever knew you were there. Do you think it was the same guy?
It's possible.
It's seeming like it is.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, you know, the differences that could occur between the murders is just could be a person growing into his own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because in New Orleans, he took it a step further.
Yeah.
He got real brazen. Very brazen. One, he started just killing people in their homes. And there were witnesses. There's actually a description of the person. You know, some people saw him. But he definitely had the city frightened to death. Especially with the cops saying, yeah, it's one crazy guy out there killing everybody. Just want to let you guys know. He's on random acts. There's a guy that's going out there. He's purposely, you know, slaughtering these people.
Right.
And it scared the shit out of everybody in the city. And then he decided to go ahead and give a little message to everyone. I'll let you read the letter because the letter is interesting. The letter from hell, as some people call it.
The letter from hell. 13 March 1919. Esteemed mortal. They have never caught me and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as that ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orleanians and your foolish police call the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims.
You know, that line referring to them as Orleanians, it tells me right there that he's probably from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't feel as though he's part of that.
Yeah,
he's that city.
When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe besmeared with the blood and brains of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they've conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they've been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but his satanic majesty, Francis Joseph, etc. But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover what I am, for it were better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axeman. I don't think there is any need of such a warning, for I feel sure the police will always dodge me as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as a most horrible murderer, which I am, but I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in a close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time on next Tuesday night, March 19th, 1919, I'm going to pass over New Orleans in my infinite mercy. I'm going to make a little proposition to you people. And here it is. I am very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time that I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well then, so much the better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is that some of you people who do not jazz it on Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe. Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping that you will publish this, and that it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that has ever existed, either in fact or in realm of fancy, the Axeman.
And what do you think? You think people were playing music that night or what?
Per the killer statement that no one listening to jazz would get the axe, the music flowed from homes across much of the city, dance halls were filled to capacity, professional and amateur bands played jazz at parties at hundreds of houses around town, and no one was killed.
People took it very seriously.
This
was a city in terror, man.
Yeah, oh yeah. For several weeks, all was quiet, but people still lived in fear. On August 10th, 1919, another grocer named Steve Boca was attacked in his bedroom as he slept. Boca awoke during the night to find a dark figure looming over his bed. Suffering from a blow from an axe, he survived, and upon regaining consciousness, he ran to the home of his neighbor, where he lost consciousness and collapsed. He was then treated for his injuries, but was unable to remember the details of the attack. Like others who had been assailed by the Axeman, nothing was taken from his home, and a panel on the back door of the home had been chiseled away. On September 2nd, a local druggist escaped the lethal Axeman when he fired several shots at an intruder who had broken into his home. The killer left a broken door and an axe behind. How screwed up would that be?
No joke. How close did that guy come?
On September 3rd, 1919, a young girl named Sarah Lauman was attacked with an axe while she slept in her locked and shuttered home. When neighbors came to check on the woman who lived alone, they discovered her lying unconscious in her bed, suffering from a severe head injury and missing several teeth. Though she suffered from a brain concussion, she recovered. An axe was discovered in the front lawn of the building. Once again, New Orleans was a state of hysteria, but nothing more would ever be heard from the Axeman for nearly 2 months. The final attack came on October 27th, 1919, when another grocer was slain. That night, his wife had heard a noise and arrived at the door of the bedroom just as a large, axe-wielding man was fleeing the scene. Pepitone had been struck in the head and was covered in his own blood. His murderer left his wife and six children behind. Miss Pepitone, the mother of six children, was unable to describe any characteristics of the killer. The usual clues were left behind. Authorities continued to work on the case, but it would be in vain. Pepitone's murder was the last known of the Axeman killer. He was never seen or heard from in New Orleans again.
He's nuts, man.
Dude.
And you know, I've lived through periods like in Louisiana. Derrick Todd Lee is the biggest one that comes to mind. With the Derrick Todd Lee serial killings, everybody was frightened. People were locking their doors at night. You know, it really had people scared shitless. And I want to say he killed 5 people, I think it was. Imagine living through this shit.
Right. And all you, like, there's no internet.
Yeah.
There's no text message from your homeowners association. You find out...
You go to the grocery store or a barbershop, and somebody's talking about whoever got killed the night before.
Yeah, you find out the next day that your neighbor is a victim of the Axeman. Right. Terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about pop culture and scary movies and, you know, but...
Real life.
Yeah. Real life.
It's terrifying.
As a little bit of an aside, as we're kind of coming towards the end, I don't know if it's somehow we just stumble upon things at the same time as the rest of the universe. As I was doing research for the Axeman episode, I discovered that BuzzFeed just did a feature on the Axeman in New Orleans. Yeah, like it came out last week.
Oh, wow.
I did not watch it. I didn't want it to be... I wanted ours to be topical without borrowing from there. So the information that we talked about, I'm sure, is the same. But we didn't steal anything. Any similarities are purely coincidental. Because I looked at the date and I was like, "Well, crap." So, but yeah, then there was a little jazz number written called the Axeman Jazz,
yes,
that we'll be playing at the end of this episode.
You know, and how much of the fact that the letter came out with this self-described thing of being the angel of death, basically, and the only description they ever had of this guy is a dark figure with an axe.
Right.
Nobody ever saw a face. How much did that add to the mythos of the time? Because you got to realize, though, early 1900s, people were still in a lot of superstitious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you can bet that the churches were packed on Sundays, and lots of jazz was playing in a lot of homes all the time.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like I said, that would just be terrifying.
Well, and New Orleans is a somewhat cosmopolitan city. I mean, it's got an active nightlife, you know, the Mississippi River and all the trade, the riverboat gambling, like all that stuff. You know, it's always been an awake city. It's not like a cozy little nest. So
right.
How brazen this guy had to be just walking into places in a city that never sleeps and
just randomly jumping in the house and killing people.
Absolutely.
Not knowing what's inside or anything, just...
Well, like one guy shot at him.
Yeah.
Chased him off. But then he left his axe and he had chiseled that panel away. Like, I bet you that guy's fucking... He was in church on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I'll change my ways. Thank you for saving me from that. But that's what we have on Unsolved Mysterious Axe Murders for the now. Because every time I tend to look, I find another string of them, and it's... There's a shitload of people getting axed.
Oh, yeah.
In the early...
talk about Lizzie Borden a little bit and absolutely. Take it from there. And, you know, she just... Axe murderers, I remember when growing up, that was like a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you don't hear about axe murders a lot nowadays, but back then it was fairly prominent, apparently.
Yeah.
It was a weapon of choice for a lot of psychos.
Well, it was easy to find, easy to wield.
Had an axe in the back, you know. Yeah. You walk up to a house, there's going to be something in the woodshed.
It's probably going to just have one stuck in a stump.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like you even have to go in the woodshed. You're just going to find it laying around somewhere.
Right.
You know?
I've even got an axe back here.
That said, just be glad that if you live in Texas, you can carry both your sword and your gun in case the axe man comes to visit you.
Well, they're not like the Beastmaster, dude, and a loincloth and a sword.
That's it.
Calling my eagle from up above.
With that, I think that's in the bag. That's going to be called episode 44, The Axeman of New Orleans.
Signing off.
The Servant Girl Annihilator and the Mulatto Murders of 1911 and 1912.
My dad hated that word, by the way.
The mulattoes?
Dad hated that word. Because being of mixed race, he felt as though it was a derivative of the word mule.
Oh, really?
So he hated. Oh, yeah. He'd get in bar fights with people.
I never really thought of it before.
Yeah, like, yeah. Just my dad's the only one that ever. Yeah, I know. Like, I'm just saying. Like, my dad hated that word so much.
Well, in honor of your dad, I won't use that word no more.
No worries.
Anyway, here's a little bit of Axeman Jazz. Signing us off tonight.
Later.